name is Salon Moore. I was wrongfully convicted of murder, first degree, and shooting with intent to kill for 18 years. I got released July 18th, 2016.
Hi, this is Brooke. I'm here with DeMarco, and you're listening to Actual Innocence. We're a podcast bringing awareness to wrongful conviction and issues in the justice system. How's your week been, DeMarco?
My week was fabulous. I got to visit with Joey Fraunhauser and David Williams. They're in OSU of OKC, and I spoke with them about starting school in spring semester.
What are you going to study?
I'm not sure yet. I have a couple of options.
That's good.
You know, I work in the medical field, and I'm also a co-host, so, you know, I'm not sure if I want to stay in a medical field or if I want to get something to help me with my co-hosting career.
Yeah, I think that you are good at both of those because you're caring, and so that's really important with the medical field, but also, you're a natural. I mean, when you speak, people listen because you're good at it.
Mm-hmm. And I really like this co-hosting thing. This is, woo.
You have a lot of empathy, and I think that that's really important. I think that you're really good at empathizing with the people who we interview, and I think that that's one of your talents.
Yeah, because I can relate to a lot of the things they're saying, what they went through, and because, you know, I was in the same situation with them, so I can relate.
Absolutely. And you were the person who scheduled Salam, who is the man that we interviewed for today, and I was just wondering if you could tell me and the listeners how you first met him.
We were at Cushing Correctional Center, and we met on the basketball court. We stayed on the same unit, but, you know, we met and started talking because we played basketball. You know, we was always competitive.
Who won more games?
We never played one-on-one, so I really don't know. But just being me, knowing how good I make a team, I'm just going to go out and say me.
I love it.
And we play two different positions. You know, we're both tall. You know, I'm more of an in-the-paint type of guy. You know, but I can play the point, the one or the two, but he's more of a two guard. He shoots a lot. He really can't get in the paint, you know, and bang with the big fellas, although he's a big fella.
How tall are you?
I'm 6'5".
Oh, my gosh. And how tall is he, do you know?
He's about 6'3".
Wow. So I have a trivia question today. Before we go on to that, though, I was hoping that we could talk about our first sponsor.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Supporting our sponsors helps to support our show and keep it free and self-sustaining. And I understand sometimes you can't financially support our sponsors, but if you just give them a shout out on Twitter or Facebook or any social media, it really can go a long way to thanking them for sponsoring us. What if hiring could be easier, more streamlined, and less time-consuming? So even when you're busy, you could still be smart about the way you hire. I feel that way all the time. I need help, but I don't have time to go through the process of screening a bunch of people and maybe not even end up finding someone. I'm so glad I discovered ZipRecruiter. Aren't you, DeMarco?
Yes, I am. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting so you can receive the best possible matches. Those things make ZipRecruiter different because you don't have to worry about the right candidates finding you. It finds them.
No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day.
ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/actual. That's ZipRecruiter.com/actual. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/actual. DeMarco, can you give it to him one more time?
Sure. ZipRecruiter.com/actual.
Okay, DeMarco, are you ready for this week's trivia question?
Yes, I am. I love trivia.
This week's trivia question came from deathpenalty.org. It's multiple choice, and it's from a study done between 2007 and 2017. The question is, What is the leading reason that someone is wrongfully convicted and then sentenced to death row? A is official misconduct. B is perjury or a false accusation. C is false or misleading forensic evidence. And D is inadequate legal defense.
This is a really hard one, but I'm going to go with C. I'm going with C. False what?
You're right. It is really hard. And those are actually the top four reasons. All of those reasons are reasons that someone is sentenced to death. But the answer is actually A. 82.4% of people who were exonerated from a death sentence in those 10 years were there because of official misconduct. That makes me sick.
That's terrible.
Yeah, and a close second was 76.5% of the people exonerated had been put there by a false accusation or perjury. So basically, all of these people have been sentenced to death because someone lied or someone made a bad choice. And
man, that's terrible. That's how I was in prison, wrongly in prison. False accusation. Yes, that's definitely how. Yeah, that's terrible.
And Oklahoma has the death penalty, correct?
Yes.
How did you feel about the death penalty? Do you remember how you felt about it before you were wrongfully convicted?
I didn't. I'm going to have to say I didn't believe in it. You know, just because you can put down innocent people. Even without my situation, things happen. And anyone could be wrongly accused. It can happen to anyone. You know, just on the fact that you could kill the wrong person, I don't believe in it. Well, here's another person that I found, Salon Moore, who I had the experience of being on the yard with. We played basketball together, and you know, he's a competitive person, but here he's up next. So Mr. Moore, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I was born in Oklahoma City, and I was raised back and forth from Oklahoma City to Clinton, Oklahoma. But, you know, I spent the majority of my time in Oklahoma City. I lived till I turned 16 before I got, you know, arrested. You know, and other than that, I grew up in Cushing, in kind of a, you know, the regular spot there, you know. They send teenagers to.
Do you have a big family? Any siblings?
Oh, well, I grew up in the house. It was my father, my mother, and five other siblings, my brothers. And, you know, as far as I can remember, that's, you know, up till I got incarcerated, that's how it was.
It was all boys?
It was all boys. We was all boys. Too tough. I'm trying to tell you. Mm. I'm trying to tell you. It was too tough.
Were you the oldest, youngest?
Oh, okay. I'm the second to the base.
Oh, wow.
Now, I'm, you know, second in line, man, to the day. It's six of us, my oldest brother, Aaron, and Brian, and Shannon, and Ronald, rest in the peace. And then me, and then it's my little brother, Reginald.
Mm, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm curious, what kind of things did you do when you growing up? You know, like, what were you into?
Oh, man, basketball. Just coming up, I was into a whole lot of stuff, man. It was real wicked, man. It was like, I did good, did bad. And if I try to live my life, man.
The typical teenager, good and bad and all over.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And, you know, I had a son when I was real, real, real young. I was like 13. I was taking care of a whole baby at 13. So,
oh, wow.
You know, I was in the streets. You know what I mean? I was in the streets, man. And, you know, it was like my interaction with the police was regularly. You know what I mean? And it was regularly. I can say that. It was gang tags, you know, drug cases, after, you know, all that.
So in January of 1998, how old were you?
16. Yeah, I turned 16, August 7th, 1998, I turned 17 at Lloyd E. Rader Center, 18 in the Oklahoma County Jail, 19 in the A&R?
Yeah.
Yeah. And okay. After that, 21 all the way up to 35. I've been, I spent the whole teens in the penitentiary.
Can I ask you both a question? What is a birthday like in prison? Do you get a cake? Do you get celebrating?
Hey, that's crazy that you asked me that. It's all love coming from, you know, a person that got a life sentence. You know what I mean? Because, you know, ain't no love really in the penitentiary. It's all you got is your comrades and who you with. The guys that, you know, I guess your gang or your clique or however you want to put it. But that's all you really have out in there. And for everybody to come together on that day, and we call it a spread. We'll throw a spread together, you know, soup, beans, meat, chips, you know, pops. We'll have it all. You know, we'll throw that together. Somebody make a crazy looking card or something. Everybody sign it. It's just, you know, it just.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's, how can I say it? It's just a thought that counts, you know what I mean? For everybody just to be like, you know,
right,
come together one day for your birthday, you know what I mean? Because it's real in there. People in there ain't got no food like that to be trying to throw nobody in no party. It's real off in there.
No, I know. Trust me, I know.
Wow.
Yeah. It's real off in there. And every day that I'm out there, like I said, I've been locked up since I was 16. And for me to get out and be, like, dropped off into this type of environment, it scares me sometimes. You know what I mean? It actually does scare me sometimes. I'm like, this world is way too big, man. Like, you know, and there you can find. You got somebody that's going to tell you what to do, how to do it, when to do it. You know? So now you're looking for, like, you have that type of structure. Now it's yourself to put that on you. Like, you know what I mean? Sometimes you can get stressed out and don't even forget about a breakfast, lunch, or a dinner.
Yeah.
You know? It's real life issues out here, man. It's not no $8 medical bills. You can say, I went to the hospital. I was in the hospital one time, and the bill came to my house, talking about $900-something. I said, what? And I didn't get nothing but my heart blood pressure check or something like that. You know what I mean? Something that's going to cost me a free walkthrough. I'm like, man, hey. I said, I know next time, boy, I feel I'm going to just lay down. You know what I mean? Hey. It's real out here, man.
Yeah.
It's real. Like I said, you know, I've done that 18. I got out. I wasn't even out 10 days, and I got married.
So you know what? You need to do a comedy show.
No, he's funny. He's a really funny dude.
I can tell.
No, he loves to joke around. Trust me. I was next to him for a year. He loves to joke. Yeah.
That's funny though, because I think that stuff all the time, but when you're like, yeah, I'm just gonna lay down, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's brilliant. Like, really?
Yeah, man. It's like, you know, like DeMarco, man. You know, it's like, you know, we sat on that yard, man, walking back and forth, bumping them MP3 players. And, you know, that's before they even had MP3 players in the penitentiary. You know how we did it? You know what I'm saying? And we were walking back and forth, trying to get our head right, push-ups, man. And be like, man, we've been down here this long. We used to sit up and talk about this right here, man.
Yeah, yeah. And I heard it is. So let me ask you a question. So on January 8th, a man was shot and killed, and there was a woman that was also shot, but she lived. The woman said that she didn't recognize the gunman, but also said that she had stolen something from you in the past. Am I understanding that correctly? Can you tell me more about it?
Well, okay. All right, okay. Now, they said I shot a Mexican dude and shot a black woman leg off. Now, later, the Mexican dude, they said I entered the door frame with a shotgun, shot the Mexican head off, shot him again, and turned on her and shot her again and went up over her. And I'm like, wow, you know what I mean? I heard about it. Now, don't get me wrong, you know what I'm saying? I heard about the murder, you know what I mean, and the shooting, all that, because I'm from the area it happened in.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Everybody heard about it, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, damn. I'm like, who done it? Who was it? Like, you know, and they said, well, it was. We all was like, what? It was, you know, it was Doris. But, you know what I mean? I don't know. I think that's the woman. That's the lady that got her leg shot off. Her name was Doris. Say right. You know, my God, you know, continues to bless her and strengthen her and help her. You know what I mean? She's a good woman. I haven't yet seen her since I've been out. Mm. You know, and that's something I would love to do. Like, you know, have her go to church with me one time, or even take her out to eat, or, you know, something. You know what I mean? Like, I hope she don't feel like I'm, you know, holding a grudge, or I hate her, or, you know what I mean? Like, those 18 years in that, you know, incarcerated probably saved me. You know what I mean? I don't know. I ain't the one to question God. You know what I mean? I'm a God-fearing man. You know, I ain't the one to question him. So, you know, it probably saved me. But for her, she the one that came to court and testified on me, said that it was me. that done it. You know, and
I'm just curious. Do you have any idea what made the police consider you as a suspect?
Well, given, you know, just my bump ins, you know, my I had a juvie record. You know, my juvie record was wicked. Yeah, see, you know what I mean? I had a juvie record, man. It's, you know, it was crazy. That's what I say. So, you know, they were just really probably wanted to just get me off the streets anyway or some stuff. Well, I don't know. To this day, I still question that. But, you know what I mean? I ain't going to let that ruin my future. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely know what you mean. Yeah.
Yes, you know exactly what I mean. Boy, it was one person that could relate to me, boy. Hey.
I definitely can. So, listen. Yeah, man. Hey. So you were 16 when they picked you up and questioned you. Did you have a parent or an attorney present?
No, actually, I was at Lloyd E. Rader Center, February 4, 1999. I was at Lloyd E. Rader Center for some juvenile stuff. But I got, you know, 6 to 9 months in Rader or whatever. So like 8 months in Rader, these people come up there. I'm in the basketball game. They come over to talk to me. I'm thinking it's more like for like placement, like going to a group home or something until I work out of it like that or whatever. You know what I mean? Because I wasn't getting the visits. You know how this stuff is in your juvenile. You know, I wasn't getting the visits. So they trying to put me in a group home and all that. So it was talking about they was two Oklahoma homicide detectives want to talk to you. And I'm like, who? I'm like, nah, I don't know nothing. What do you mean they want to talk to me? I'm like, me? I'm like, nah. And they like, you know, well, since I was at Lloyd E. Rader, the guy, I guess, that ran it at the time, I can't remember his name, but I guess, you know, he signed over, you know, like, he's my parent's guardian since I was in the system or something. I don't know.
Oh, he was like your guardian at the time, yeah.
Right. Yeah, you know what I mean? So I'm like, all right. I'm like, they get me in a room. I'm thinking it's still these people in my mind until they say it's two Oklahoma homicide detectives, Bob Bemo and Bill Cook, James Cook. I think one of them's rested. I don't know, but, you know, it's been a long time. And they asking me questions. Like, this is February 4, 1999, and the murder took place January 8, 1998. So they asking me where I was at 13 months, you know,
later
or like
or prior like, yeah
where, mm. yeah like where I was at where was you at the night of January 8th? I said, man, I don't know. I was probably locked up. I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, I can't, my mind don't work like that where I can just go back in time like January 8th, approximately 6:40. I can't do that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't even know what I did yesterday.
Right, like, I don't know where I was at on that day, you know what I mean? It's impossible for me to know, you know. And they were like, yeah, you've been charged with a first-degree murder. I'm like, why did you do it? I'm saying, why did I do what? Why did you kill her? Kill him. Why did you kill him? I said, man, look, I want my attorney, man. So they get to keep telling me that I killed these people and I'm doing this and doing that, you know. I'm like, I ain't did nothing. Don't know what you're talking about, man. Y'all got the wrong guy. I'm sorry. Like, you know, like, y'all just telling me that I didn't just kill somebody. Would y'all want me to tell them that I killed somebody? What did y'all, you know, y'all gonna put it in my head that I killed somebody? I don't know. They just kept repeating that, like, you killed somebody. Until I said, you know what, I want my attorney, man. I want my attorney. He's like, oh yeah, you're gonna be booked in the county. You know, I'm like, okay, my attorney, Mike Arnett. Yeah, Mike Arnett, I want him.
Good for you.
So the very next day, they come and get me and take me to Oklahoma County Detention Center. February 4, 1999, they came and got me. I've been in the county facing them bogus crimes since then. Stayed in there for 27 months until I went to trial.
And what did they charge you with?
First-degree murder and shooting with intent to kill.
Attorney, was he a paid attorney?
Oh, yes, he was paid. Mike Arnett, yeah, he was a paid attorney. He you know, I you know, it's a whole lot of my people that say something about Mike Arnett, you know what I mean? But Mike Arnett's the type of guy, he never gave up on me for 18 years, man. He was my attorney that did the trial. He was the attorney that did that post-conviction relief to set me free.
Oh, okay. How did you get back in touch with him, or was he in y'all in touch the whole time?
Well, when we lost the trial, he vowed to me, like, man, I'll never leave you until they get you out of here, man.
That's amazing.
It is.
You know, he told me this. You know what I mean? Like, really had nobody, you know what I'm saying, just stuck with me, like, you know, like, it was times, you know, them, you know how those appeals go, man, 3 or 4 years stretch. you know, 2 year stretch. You know how those appeals go. You know what I mean? Sometimes they ran off on the plug, but he came back, you know what I mean? And he let me know what, you know, he let me know what's up, you know what I mean? So I couldn't do nothing but respect it, you know what I mean? Like, I don't have nothing bad to say about Mike Arnett. He's an angel in my eyes, man, because he taught me there, you know what I mean? Like, one guy that believed in me from the gate was Mike Arnett. And he told me that once we lost trials, like, man, I would never leave you until you walk out them gates, man. He said everything else is everything. He said, I'm taking your pills and everything. Everything is pro bono on me.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I said. I have much love and respect for Michael Arnett, man. That's my guy.
Yeah, for him to do that, that's really huge. For him to represent you all them years later, stick with you and believe in you.
Right. Instead of me, you know, like it was a big thing. You know how it is in the penitentiary, DeMarco. You know how it is in there, man. And you going to the law library? You going to the law library? You going to the law? You know what I mean? Like, look there, man. I always thought, like, I got an attorney. But in the same token, I knew what they was meaning now. You know what I mean? Like, you probably pushed harder for yourself. Maybe, you know, them gates will rattle for you. You ain't no telling. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They might rattle for you. You know, but, you know, I was blessed with an opportunity, though. And God sent me someone that rolled like, you know, I can't take nothing off of it. You know what I mean? And the private investigator lady, you know what I'm saying? And may God rest her soul.
Yeah. So were y'all in touch over the years? Were y'all in touch? Y'all stayed in touch, or?
With who? Like the
private? No. You and Mike Arnett.
Me and Mike Arnett. Yeah, we. Mike Arnett is saying every time he said we're going up for appeal. Or, you know, he'll come visit me every so often, you know what I mean? I told you, like I said, you know how them pills is, you know, he'll always accept my phone calls. One thing I have to say, Mike Arnett did. He always accepted that phone call. You know what I mean? That's something big right there. I can always call him and have him do something for me. You know, he always handled it for me, man. You know, but yeah, we always stayed in touch. Mike Arnett always kept his phone on for me, always kept me updated. And, you know, he always did that. You know what I mean? I can't say that. Come visit me in the penitentiary. You know, he always done that.
Okay. So how long was you in the county before your trial?
I was in the county 27 months for my trial, until my trial started.
And what was your trial like?
Wow, man, check it. It was so crazy, man. I'm talking about, like, far as in the juries they picked, you know, they seemed like they was really wanting to do something else the whole time. They just sitting there like they bored, they yawning, you know, and I'm like, wow, this is crazy right here. This whole time, I'm just sitting up in this building, like, I can't, it's something that they ain't even paying attention to, like, to the whole case. They're not even paying attention to it.
Was it a jury of your peers?
It was a jury of my so-called peers. Exactly what they were, my so-called peers.
What did your so-called peers look like?
It was, you know, it was multi. One black woman on there with a black woman. It was some Caucasians, if you want to call it, you know. It's...
Were they old, young?
It was mixture. You know, it was a mixture, yeah. It was a mixture, like some people. Like, it was one dude that came up there, it was a jury, and he told me he was wrongfully convicted. They hurry up and got him away from there. He was like, yeah, we ain't gonna use him. Hurry up and bad here, get him. Yeah, we're gonna excuse him real quick. But it was, you know, it was like a day, I think. It didn't, you know, a day to pick the jurors or something.
DeMarco, I noticed when we were recording our interview that your four-legged friend was barking a little in the background. What's she so happy about?
Yes, she's excited because her bark box was delivered today.
It sounds like she really loved it. So how does that whole thing work?
It's great. Every month she gets 4 to 6 treats, the natural kind, and fun toys. This month was the Halloween box. I just told them her size and chose a plan. It was that easy. It shipped to me for free on the 15th of every month.
Wow, that does sound easy. But is it one of those services that you get sick of after a while?
No way. Brandy has been getting her boxes for months now. She's even started to recognize the packages her mail. It was so cute today when our box was delivered. The delivery person knocked on the door, and as soon as she spotted the box, she went to the delivery man and sat there at attention, hoping he would open it and give her one of those delicious all-natural treats inside. It comes right to your door. Plus, BarkBox has a guarantee. If they send you something that your dog doesn't like, they'll replace it. Really, you can't lose.
Okay, I think I'm sold. This sounds like such a great service. I wish I would have signed up months ago.
You don't have a dog.
You're right. Actually, I'm always trying to figure out the perfect gift for my mom. And since my brother and I have moved out, her dog has become her new favorite. Her and her dog are both going to love BarkBox. I wonder if they make a box for cats. For a free extra month of BarkBox, visit BarkBox.com/actual when you subscribe to a 6 or 12 month plan. DeMarco, can you remind the listeners one more time of our code?
BarkBox.com/actual. I read somewhere that the woman, she changed her testimony a few times. And when someone with a relationship to you entered the courtroom, can you tell me more about that?
Oh, he's talking about Siobhan DeMarco. That's my son's mother. I told you, like I said, I had a son and I was 13. He's talking about her mother, you know, and talking about his mother. Yeah, he's talking about his mother. That's who I was with at the time, you know, and she ain't do nothing wrong. She ain't done nothing wrong, man. You know, she just been a woman showing up to her man's court date, supporting, you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to tell you this right here. You know, I really don't tell people this story, but it's true. So, you know, I want the truth to be told. Like, she used to be a D girl. She taught me the game. When she had, you know, when she had Poppy, which is our son, she got put up and you raise him. I get out here now. You know what I mean? I'd rather for a child to have his mother than his father, because his mother gonna lease, you know, go lease. Well, you know how it is now with the dude. Hey, man, you know how it is. So, you know what I mean? I'm like, I get out here and, you know, do what I need to do to provide for us. You know what I mean? Straight up.
You said she was a D girl. Can you explain to the listeners what a D girl is to those who may not know?
And to me.
Well, she used to slang.
And what is slang?
Well, hey.
She sold dope, basically, is what she did.
That's what she done. That's what she done, man. Back in the day, she used to do that, man. And, you know, and there used to be a little, group of us. It used to be about four or five of us. And it'd be her, you know, we all used to do our thing, you know what I mean? And, you know, it was a little tight group right there. He was busted up now, but, you know, there's still a few hanging on. Did that, and I just, like, you know, I took on the responsibility as a father, you know, and I had to provide. So, you know, that's how I had to step out there in the streets early.
You know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, wait, can I ask a question then? Was it because of just, like, that group, like, her connections, that the woman said she was intimidated? Or, I don't understand, do you know what I mean?
No, we knew the woman, like, you know, she was a part of the neighborhood. She was a smoker, you know what I mean? She used to smoke crack cocaine, you know what I mean? And we used to serve her back then, you know what I mean? She was like family, you know, that's how I looked at her, you know what I mean? Like, Doris was always family, her sister and her mama. You know, I know all three of them, they used to be cool as a fan, you know what I mean? And they loved me, and I don't understand how this happened, because they all love me. That's why I was shocked when I seen her show up at the preliminary hearing saying what she said. You know what I mean? When she came to the preliminary hearing, she had a hose. I'm talking about everything was just weird. Like, you know, my lawyer caught up, you know, and it was just a whole trial was crooked to me. The whole trial.
What did the prosecution use for evidence?
Her testimony.
Her testimony, okay.
Her testimony, and there was another guy's testimony that they didn't use in trial, right? Mm-hmm. And this is crazy, though, because I didn't find it out until trial, right? The dude name was Jesse Lee Fishback, something like that. He said that he heard me come into the house and say, you know, B, where's my dope? And then, you know, a shotgun blast. Then he, you know, grabbed his knife and backed into the closet. They asked him, they used him as an eyewitness, but he was really like a
sound witness.
Exactly. Mm. But he said the only time he came in contact with me was we was at a park and it was like a car length over, and the dude that was driving the car, he was in, asked me, do I know where to get some, you know, some weed at? And I said, nah, I don't know where to get none of that. Just that line right there, don't know where to get none of that. Just that little line right there. 3 months later, fast forward, 3 months later to Be Where's My Dope and the Shotgun Blast. He said, that was my voice. Mm. He said he jumped out the window and, you know, he first pulled his knife out, jumped out the window and ran down the street. Okay, now this is a preliminary. This is what they use the preliminary hearing to bound me over the trial. This testimony and her testimony, I'm going to say that, but it was really his testimony that really they just used to bound me over for trial. So we get to trial. They don't use him as a witness, but they show him pictures now of the murder scene. This is my first time seeing pictures of the murder scene at trial. And I'll be doing all the windows got bars on it. I want to know how he got out the window and ran down the street.
What?
I'm telling you, it's all right there in the paperwork, man. It's all right there in the paperwork. It's just, it's the system, man. You know, it's corrupted. It's tricky. It is what it is, man. It is what it is, man. Them bring backs go a long way. And I really do believe that.
You know, how long did
show light upon us.
Man, that's crazy. How long did the jury deliberate?
Seriously, man, 90 minutes.
90 minutes.
90 minutes, man. I'm sitting in this little closet up in the Oklahoma County jail. We switch out the clothes and stuff for trial. It's like a little bench in there. I was walking around here pacing. I thought I was in for 4 hours pacing. I'm praying and everything, man. They dude came back and they took me in their courtroom. And as the jurors reached the verdict, and you know, the foreman stood up and was, yes, and they read it, and they talking about guilty, guilty, and they sentenced me 2-3 weeks later to life without and life with, maxed me out on both charges.
Life without parole, yeah. And life with parole. Ooh, for a 16, and by 17.
Yeah, filed for a bill in particular. They was gonna try to kill me, man. They filed for a bill in particular. They was trying to kill me, man.
I don't know what, I've never heard that before. A bill of particulars?
That's the death.
Thank God. Yeah, thank God. You know, I'm like, wow, for real. Like, I probably wouldn't have been here now. You know what I mean? Seriously. Like, this is crazy, but you know, life, you know, I'm trying to adapt. You know what I mean? I'm trying to adapt right now. You know what I mean? It's hard. I ain't gonna lie. It's hard. You know what I mean? Like, my wife, she, you know, mentally, she's strong for me. You know what I mean? Mentally, she is, man.
Man, I know it's hard. I do know it's hard. I'm just, hey, when they came back with life with and life without, how did you act? How was, you know, how did you feel? How did you take it? Did you cry? Did you...
Ah, man, it didn't dine on me. You hear me? It didn't dine on me, man. It didn't. I'm like, life without life. I'm looking like, who was they talking? What is a life? Like, what they saying? I got to do my life, then my son's life got to come in here, and they going to get another. What they talking about? Two lives, you know what I mean? Consecutive. Like, y'all running them back to back. Not y'all didn't run it concurrently. Y'all ran them back to back. Like, who can do one life? That's not without parole first, and then put life with in the second. Like, who does that? You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's just, yeah, who does that? Like, hey, man, it is what it is. It didn't dine on me until, like, I say, it didn't dine on me until probably, like, I'm going to say probably a decade later.
Well, and you were charged as an adult, right? But they had pulled you out of a juvenile facility, so obviously you were a juvenile. I don't understand how they do that.
Well, I don't either, but that's what they do, and they does it every day. It's people in the penitentiary right now, 16, 17, right now, in the penitentiary.
How was prison for you? What was prison like for you? I know how it was for me, but what was it like for you?
Man, it was wicked. It was crazy in that thing, man. Like, you know, just to hear knives getting sharpened on the floor, you know, jigger out, just this type of stuff that just you got to hear every day, you got to listen for, and you got to look for, and you know what I mean? And it's a job. It's a full-time job in that thing, man.
A full-time job trying to stay alert and stay alive.
Exactly. It's a full-time job and that thing. Like, you know, it's easy out here. I can't lie, but in there, it was crazy. You succumb to this little space like a closet, you know what I mean? And you're in there with another dude and multiple dudes. Let me say that. You know, you're in there with another dude and you're in there with multiple dudes, you know what I mean? And everybody got their own little, that morning, that feeling where they get up and they want to be left alone. Some of them want to get joked. And, you know, some you got that, you know, people over there got some attitude where, you know, they don't really care. Some of them ain't got respect. And you got some of them old schools that been in there 30, 40 plus original convicts. And they ain't tolerating it. And, you know, you trying to calm this down. And there's so much stuff going on. You ain't got time to try to better yourself in that place, man. You got time in there to try to survive. That's it.
All different types of personality.
That's all it is, man. That's it, man. You know.
Did you have any education opportunities? I mean, you were 16. Did you get a chance to finish high school?
I mean, I did, and I did not do that. I did not get a chance. I was going to Emerson Alternative School before I got locked up, and I was going toward, you know, get my GED while I was at the Lloyd E. Rader Center. But once they came and got me and booked me for the murder and the shooting with intent to kill, and you know, the county jail, I don't know how they do it now, but back then they didn't have no school and that thing. They didn't, you know, it wasn't none of that for the people that they know is going to be there for, you know, an ample amount of time, you know. But, they didn't give me nothing. And, once I got convicted and they send you the A&R, you know, A&R is Lexington, that's where you know it's assessment and receiving. Am I correct, DeMarco?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. And that's where, so you get convicted, you go there and get your DOC number, you know, and some
get
people
your
that go there,
shaved.
They got like, yeah, you get your head shaved, man. You get that photo on there, that first ugly photo you get, looking like, you know, you just jumped out of a tree on somebody. You get that first photo.
Looking real funny.
Real funny, real suspect. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's real. But once you get there, like the guys that got 20-year sentence versus the 5-year sentence, 10-year sentence, they get this, what they call access needs. Like, some of them have to have a GED in order to go get out. Some of them, they put them there to get a thank for a chain class, a cage of rage class, you know, even drug class, you know what I mean? And they want that. Like, you got to take this in here, you know? They didn't give me not one access need when I came through at 19 years old.
And where did you go? Once you were convicted, you had two life sentences. Where did they send you?
Gladiator School, man.
Granite.
AKA Granite, Oklahoma, man. Oklahoma State Reformatory, man.
Yeah, it was definitely Gladiator School. That's what it was called, Gladiator School. And that's what it was.
Man, I'm talking about now. Well, back, you know, it kind of softened up now. But back then, though, my first day off the bus, man, I'm seeing a Mexican, like, do some Jet Li type kicks and on this dude again. I'm talking about, I'm seeing some real stuff off the bus. You know what I mean? I'm looking like, it's real in here. It's real in here. You know what I mean? You don't get this type of, this much space in that county. You know, you got 24, you line to go 3 or 4 days without even getting out for an hour to go shower. You know, it's real in Oklahoma County, you know? And I'll get to the yard and see all these people running around. I'm seeing knives. I'm seeing this. I'm seeing, you know what I mean? I'm like, oh yeah, it's real. It's really real. You know what I mean? It's really real.
I'm curious, you know, when you were convicted, did you have any family members that, you know, was by your side? Or how did that affect your relationship with your family?
Oh, man. My mother stayed by my side. You know, I can say that. My mother rolled with me since day one. She ain't never left me. I ain't never left me. I love her. You know what I mean? For that, I have people that came and gone. You know how they jump out the college, man.
Mm-hmm.
They come and go, man. You got those sweet nothings. That's what you call them, man. You got those sweet nothings, man. And that's exactly what they are, man. Exactly how I said. They're sweet nothings, man. And they come and go, man. You know, but they prepare you, though. I can't say I ain't learned a lot. They prepared me. You know, they prepared me, man. I'm still learning. I'm still learning over there.
Did you get to see your son very often?
Well, his mother will bring him up there. Like, you know, when I first, you know how it is. When you first get locked up, that's when they, like, ride the hardest. You know, they ride the hardest for the first, I'm going to say, 2 years. if that. I'm gonna say if that.
And then it started to sink in. Like, wow, hey, he's not coming home anytime soon.
Like the pills ain't talking about nothing, baby. They keep denying you. You know what I mean? Like, and I was the type of individual though. Like, you know, like it hurt me, but you know, I'd rather see a person happy than see a person like wait on me miserable. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'd rather for you to be happy. You know what I mean? Go find you a dude. Go live life. You know what I mean? Just don't forget about me. You know what I mean? Like, don't forget about me, man. That's all I have, man. Everybody ever just mention my name every blue moon and, you know, make me relevant. You feel me?
That's a mature attitude.
Yeah, that's me, man. I love life. You know what I mean? Like I tell my wife, I love happiness. I love, you know, I love the smallest little things. Materialistic stuff don't never matter. Ain't never mattered to me. I grew up with the uniform on my whole life. You know what I mean? Like, it don't even faze me now. Ain't none of this, like, all this, you know, it look good, don't get it wrong, but I can, you know, I can rock some jeans and a t-shirt with some, not and be all right for the rest. You know, these people here now, they think, hey, I just see some crazy stuff since I've been out, man.
While you was locked up, what kept you going? What was your motivation?
I gotta get out. I didn't do this, man. I'm innocent. I don't know what they're doing. I think it's a nightmare, man. I'm knowing it's going to wake up sometime soon, man. It ain't never woke up, man.
And that's what you held on to.
I held on to that right there, man. Like, I know I didn't do this, man. I held on to all them people that said that I did do it, that I was guilty. Like, you know what I mean? Every time I told them, it wasn't me, man. I don't know what. And they kept saying that I did do it. It was you, you know? And oh, that just fed me, man. Oh, that fed me. All the people that just, some sweet nothing just fed me, man. Like, I'm going to get out here and blow past. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to get out here and not pay man person no attention. I was just 100 miles down the street, man. And, you know, really, I rarely got visits. You know what I mean? I rarely got visits, man. I was 100 miles out down the street, DeMarco.
How often did you get visits?
About 3 or 4 times. I'm gonna give it like 3 or 4 times a year for the first, the first 2 years I was getting the one probably like once a month or something like that. Then it started going from like once every 2 months and once, you know, it went like that. Then it went a whole year. I ain't go, you know what I'm saying? It had been stuff like that. You know what I mean? It's been stuff like that, man. It's been, I'm talking about it. Hey.
Years. I've been there. I went years without a visit, so I know what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. But I'm curious, what was the appeal process like to lead to your release from prison? What evidence did they come with?
For real. I'm gonna tell you for real. Right. It was Doris A. Wright, the same lady that got on the stand on me on what was that? April 2001.
Mm-hmm.
March 17, 2001, got on the stand on me and told them people that I was the one that shot her and shot him.
Mm.
Okay, May 18, she come to court. The day you get out, what day you get out, DeMarco?
May 9th,
I went to court for that post-conviction release. And Doris Faye Wright, the same lady that got on the stand on me in 2001 came and got on the stand on me, came to my post-conviction release hearing and told them people that Bob Macy and the ADA, Richard Rennery, made her say those things against me. She told them that I know that Faith didn't do it, but they told me to say that he done it.
Mm.
She said that at my post-conviction release, man. You hear me?
Yeah.
David Prater walked in now. He was sitting up in there. My wife is in the, my mama, you know, I had people out there that, you know, she sat up there. My daughter was there. She sat up there. And
wait, where did the daughter come from?
Yes. You said a son.
Oh, well, you know, like, well, I call her my daughter now, married, you know, she's my wife's daughter. So
It's
automatically off the rip. That's my daughter too. That's how it is. When you married, that's my daughter too. That's how it goes. You know what I mean? It shouldn't be no other way. That's, you know, but
good for you.
But yeah, and she was sitting there And they kept wondering around who she was the whole time. Instead of like, you know, when she tell them like, I don't know them, I just seen them today. I don't know them. They try to make it seem like that they the one told her what to say. She was like, no, y'all need to stop playing. Y'all know what y'all told me to say against this man. You know what I mean? Like, she went up there and actually, I swear to God, if you listen, if you go look at the transcripts on my case, she said something about she want to throw the, she walked up, you know, she got one leg, she's amputated. And so she had crutches. So she was talking about throwing the crutch at the DA because it was that real. It was that real. She's like, because y'all know y'all told me to say that about that man. That man would never do that to nobody. I told y'all that. Well, it took her, you know, it took her, what, 16 years to come up to, you know, that conscious to, you know what I mean, just to set in and be like, you know, just like, man, that man ain't done that. Because she already think that, you know, that somebody else done it. And whoever done it is still out here messing with her, pestering her, talking about I should have killed you, I should have done this to you. You know what I mean? Like, I should have finished you off. Like, you know what I mean? Like, these are threats that she's getting while I'm incarcerated by the dude that she said has actually done it.
So she's scared for herself, yeah.
Right. So she's like, you know, I told y'all he never done it. You know what I mean? Dude, I'm still getting calls from the dude that's doing it. You know what I mean? All this is coming up, man. And it just seems like, you know, this is life. Let's say it's life, man. So I'm out here now just like trying to live this life, man. And avoid all that, man. Like, I'm gonna put that past me. That's my past. But I never forget where I came from.
Were you granted a new trial, or how did that work? You had to go back to trial, or back to the county?
Yes, I had to go back to the county. They filed a post-conviction relief. The judge, you know, he approved of it, and they set a court date, which was May 9th.
Mm-hmm.
I went back on the writ, habeas corpus writ. You know, that's when you go back and fight for your life again, as they say in the penitentiary. You fight for your life. You go back and fight for your life again and see what's happening. So that's what I did, man. They set me out. That's when she came up and stand on that and got up on that stand and told them what them people told her. Like, yeah, y'all need to, you know, let him go. Y'all wrong and this and that. And, you know, y'all told me to say this. Y'all took me over here. She telling them this, that while the district attorney, David Prater, is sitting there. And they talking about, oh, Your Honor, we have to go through our notes again and we have to do this and do that. So they set my court date off 2 months, July 18th, you know. So I get back July 18th. As soon as I come in the courtroom on my court date, you know what I mean? Nobody in this courtroom. You know, I'm feeling like, what's really going on? Ain't nobody in here but a little group of DAs and my lawyer, you know. And David Prater walked up to me personally and was like, hey, can I shake your hand?
The district attorney. You talking about the district attorney, right?
I'm talking about David Prater, the district attorney.
Yeah, I just wanted to get it clear.
Yeah, he came up to me and was like, can I shake your hand? And I'm like, you know, and he asked my attorney if he can have a word with me. Like, you know, my attorney was like, yeah. He came and said, you want a second chance at life? I thought, man, quit playing with me, man. What, do I want a second chance at life? A second chance at life. I want the life that I supposed to have before the second chance even got, you know. But in my mind, I'm like, yeah, man, quit playing with me. Yeah, what you mean? He said, well, you know, I decided to go ahead and just grant your post-conviction. You're a free man. I'm like, what? Like, that easy? Like, for real? It was that easy? You know what I mean? Like, it was that easy, though, for everything to be corrected after she said what she said. It wasn't no, we sorry. You know, it wasn't none of that. It wasn't, you know what I mean? It wasn't.
He didn't apologize?
You know,
no. Are you surprised?
Not at all. Not at all. I am not surprised, but I got to know David Prater, man. You know what I mean? Not just known him, but first I just known him, but I have attended church with Pastor Manning, you know, and David Prater. David Prater, you know, I ain't got nothing bad to say about David Prater. David Prater, basically, he's trying to do what's right, man. I'm going to say he one of us. You know what I mean? That's what I was going to say. He one of us. David Prater's pretty cool. You know what I mean? David Prater's pretty cool. So I was just like, you know, he came up and said, like, yeah, I'm going to let you go home. And you got a second chance of life and you get out here and, you know, show these youngsters the way and this and the other. You know what I mean? And I'm like, at the end of the day, like, man, what happened, though? Like, you know, that's all it is. Just this right here. It ain't no more than this right here. You know what I mean? I was expecting some type of, you know what I mean, something.
Right.
Like, you know, I guess he's like, you're selling for your life. Like, I'm cool. Like, I'm cool. Okay, I'm cool with that. I'm free. If that's what it is, if that's what y'all want to call it, but still, though, like, you know what I mean? Like, this 18 years is for nothing. You know what I mean? Y'all can't say, I'm sorry, or, you know.
Let me get this right. Hold on. I don't mean to cut you off, but let me get this. So the man, the DA, they pray that he comes up to you, shakes your hand, tell you he's going to give you a second chance at life, and you can go home. So when do you go home after that there?
After that there, man, believe it or not, I went to court. They signed all the paperwork, you know, around 12:30.
The same day? You went home the same day?
Yeah. I went home the same day.
What was the feeling like when he told you can go home and you gonna get a second chance of life? What was the feelings, the emotions?
I was relieved, man. I ain't gonna lie, I ain't gonna front, man. I was like shocked, like I'm free. Like, can y'all take the cuffs off me right now? Like, can I really go? Like, take the cuffs off then. You know what I mean? Like, take the cuffs off. Let me go from right here then. If I'm free to go, you know what I mean? Like, can I walk from here? Like, you know what I mean? And that's when my wife walked in, and my niece. And, you know, everybody walked in, they free my daddy, free my husband, free Faith, all these T-shirts, you know what I mean? And they didn't even know. They didn't even know. They just seen me over here smiling like a Chester cat, and they just like, this dude's fresh. And he like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, you know, I'm still over here. I'm shocked. I'm lost. I'm like, man, what? I get to go home, what? Yeah, man. But everybody, you know, everybody knew. I knew. I believed in myself. Everybody believed in me, man. You know, I had some good dudes walk up to me, man, and just like, yeah, man, you ain't you going home. Like, they psyched. Like, man, you supposed to go home, man. You about to go home. I'm like, for real? You talking to Jesus or something, man? Tell them to holler at me, man. I want to holler at Jesus, man. You know what I mean? Like, how y'all know this, man?
What day was that you was released?
July 18th.
On July the 18th, 2016, your own Independence Day. Where did you stay that day?
Okay, this is what happened. Okay, I'm gonna give you uncut. You know, I'm gonna give it to you uncut, man.
Uncut.
They let me go, man. The judge did his thing. You know, let me go. Tell me, I supposed to got out at 2 p.m. Man, I didn't get out to 10 p.m. because of some tickets 20 years prior to this, man.
They held you for some tickets 20 years ago when you was a minor. And you didn't get home. You didn't go home to that night. Are you kidding me? Y'all had already held the man 18 years for a murder he didn't do, and you didn't get out.
But he had tickets. I mean, come on. Oh my gosh.
From when he was a juvenile, and that
when I was 14, 15 years old. Yeah, it's like the private investigator, though. You know, the private investigator lady. You know, her name is Brenda Lowe. May God rest her soul. That's Mama B always. You know, but. She did the imaginable. She dressed up like a prostitute. She did all this searching for Doris Faye Wright. She done all this. Her and my wife, you know what I mean? They played a major role to my freedom. I would never take that from my wife. I'll never take that from Miss B. Mama B, I love you. May you hear me. And God rest you. Watch over me, Mama. Because I hugged that lady one time in my whole life. This woman put her life on the line for me to get free. She bided me out on them tickets.
Uh-huh.
You hear me? That yeah. Held me for 10 o'clock. And I told her don't buy. I'm, you know, me. I'm gonna sit it out. You know, like, you know.
Yeah.
She said, I want to see my baby. She never Soldier. Seen me in her life besides on the phone picture over the phone. You know what I mean? So I get out and hug that woman, man. That one time, that one night, man. And she died on me the next day.
What?
She said, "This the last thing I'm gonna do is see my baby get out."
Wow.
And she hugged me that night, and she died the very next day, man.
What did she die of?
They said she was riding a horse. She got bucked off the horse. You know, she said she was in pain that night, but she was in pain. She was standing there until they let me go. She'd been up there all day from the word go. And she like, I ain't going nowhere until I see my baby. And she didn't know me. She didn't know me, but through my wife and through the phone calls. And you know what I mean? She put her life on the line. I will always love that woman. You know what I mean?
How did you meet your wife?
Oh, wow. All right. Dry and cut. Yeah, I know. I'm going to keep it real. Facebook. 2013. In prison on Facebook.
So what? Hold on, Brooke. Let me. Hold on. So you're in prison in 2012. Oh, how did you meet her on Facebook? Just keep it a dollar.
I love it.
I love this, DeMarco. You going in, boy? You going? All right. Okay. I met her on Facebook in prison over a cellular phone that people, you know, smuggle in the penitentiary, most likely to be the wardens or, you know, the chief of security.
The chief of security that you, and he going to bring 20 phones in, and then he going to give them to somebody, and he going to have them charge you $500 to $1,000, and he going to pocket all that. So, yeah, I know what you're saying. But, yeah, it's that's,
the chief and the warden.
People be surprised. It'd be the chiefs and the wardens and the police that you think that's not doing anything that's very harsh, and he's the main one.
Yeah, they'll feed them a little goat every now and then. They'll feed them a CO, you know what I mean? Make it look good. You know, yeah, but that's
so you meet her. So you meet her on Facebook in 2012, right?
2013.
So you had access to a cellular phone, right?
Yes, I did.
And you were on Facebook, and you were in her inbox, or how did that?
Yeah, like.
I'm just curious.
Okay. I want to hear that story. Y'all want to hear the story? Sorry. Okay. This is what it was. You know, I was like more of a realist now, but I'm a pessimist now. I was more of a realist then. But you know, I don't like putting women. I got two life sentences. I'm not gonna put you up under all this stress, woman. You know what I mean? Like. I won't put this two likes on you. This is some real stuff. You can't hang with this. So, I seen her on Facebook. You know, I'm looking at a picture, Lola. I'm like, Lola, I never heard of no Lola. You know what I mean? Lola Gang. I'm like, that's okay. She cute. She looking. I'm like, okay, she bad. And I'm steady looking at pictures. And I'm like, okay, all right. And I liking them. You know what I mean? I'm literally like, I like this one. I liked it. And then I liked another one. Liked that. And I'm like, I'm liking this. You know what I mean? And she commented like, do I know you? You know, you know, she's like, do I know you? I'm like, nah, but I like what I see. And I like the more pictures on her. Like, I kept liking on her, you know what I mean? And then she's like, what's up? You know, I'm like, my name is, you know, I'm Lil Faith Abel. And she told me to call her. And I'm like, look here, I don't want to put you through nothing. I got two life sentences in the penitentiary. You know what I mean? Like, you know, this through her inbox. I'm telling her, I got two life. She shot me a number, telling me to call her. So I'm like, man, she like, call me. You know what I mean? Like on some aggressive stuff through a text. And I felt it like, well, okay. All right. So I called her. And ever since then, you know, the first conversation, you know, she asked me what went on, what, you know, she sounded real. You know, she sounded real sincere. She sounded genuine. She didn't sound like the regular. She don't sound like the regular. You know what I mean? And in her pictures, she had a stripper pole in her pants. I'm thinking she was a high about. I was thinking all types of stuff about my wife. I ain't gonna lie. She had a stripper pole. She had a stripper. Like, you know what I mean? I'm like,
she was a firefighter.
She was a firefighter. Like, I like that one.
But I'm confused, but I'm turned on. I'm like, what the? You know what I mean? Like, okay. Like, all right. And then, you know, when they came up and I'm like, why you got? She's like, this is how, you know, this is my workout. That's what I do to work out. Like, she get on the pole and work out. Yeah. So I'm like, man, hey, this is. You know, this is it right here. I'm like, okay, and I'm talking to her. You know what I mean? Me, I'm telling like, look, I got a couple girls I talk to, you know, and I got to telling her about them. She starts making me cut every one of them off, one by one, bop, bop, bop. And it was like, you know what I mean? She took over like, I got you. You know what I mean? I
ain't last woman. Understand.
I got you. Yeah, like, I got you. You know what I mean? And
you ain't
got
to worry about nothing.
That. Nothing. For the last 3 years in the penitentiary, she maybe gained like 35 pounds. I blame it all on her.
Yeah. Where's Lola at now? Where are y'all doing now?
Wow. Baby is at her house.
Mm-hmm.
She chilling at her house. She...
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she's at her house, man. We enjoying life. I'm going to put it that way. You know what I mean? We're looking it in. You know, we married. That's my wife. I love her. She love me. You know what I mean? She looking it in, you know what I mean? I'm looking it in. We just looking it in right now, trying to see where to go from here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's an adjustment for sure.
Yeah, so how's you,
yeah, that is a huge adjustment, you know, especially with someone that was in prison for as long as he was in or I was in. You know, I commend his wife to put up with him and my wife for putting up with me. But, you know, so what are your relationship with your other family members? Are you cool?
Yeah, you said your mom was like a big support.
My mama is kicking like a hyena. She is gone. My mama, she just tried to call me just then. That was her calling in. she texted on me regularly. Baby, you okay? Like, mama, I'm good. She texted me regularly. You know, I go over there and spend the night with my mama. I love my mama. You know what I mean? I go over there and spend the night with my mama. My wife called me a mama boy. But hey, I ain't sure. You know what I mean? That's my mama, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's my mother. She's there right now. I can call her right now, pull up on her right now. She's ready for whatever, especially because
And that feel good, don't it? To be able to pull up on your mom and bring her groceries or, you know, tell her you love her, give her a hug.
Yeah, I'm telling you, there's nothing like that, man. Instead of her coming down there, you know, like I say, I grew up with five other brothers, man. All my brothers been incarcerated. My mother has seen every penitentiary in the state of Oklahoma and probably four in Texas.
Good for her.
You know? You know, and she did that. You know what I mean? Now she, you know, she done that. You know, that's why I said I can't take nothing away from my mama, you know, when she didn't come see me. You know, when she made sure that I was, you know, I was alive. You know what I mean? Yeah.
What kind of work are you doing?
Right now?
Right now.
Man, be honest with you, man. You know, I'm going to keep it real.
Keep it real, bro.
I'm in the oil field, man.
The oil
field? Oil field. I said I was going to get that. That's a lot of money in the oil field.
I didn't want to tell you. I was going to say like Arby's or something, man.
Why would you say Arby's? Tell us the truth, brother.
I'm in the oil field, man. You know what I mean? I'm in the oil field, man. I like my job. I get in the pits, them shakers or whatever, you know, the frac thing. And I do my thing. It's like a piece to me, too. That's like kind of like a piece. Now, fishing is my first, you know.
I haven't been. Oh, listen. You just made me wanna. I haven't been fishing since I've been out. I wanna go fishing, but that's some other stuff. I haven't been.
That's un-American. What you?
I know it.
Fish?
I haven't been fishing.
Word to my mom. I got two fishing poles in my trunk right now, man.
Hey, I just left Oklahoma City. I was just in Oklahoma City. I called you. We actually talked a couple hours ago, and I was just in Oklahoma City. And I was visiting OSU, but that's another story. But, man, fishing. You made me reminisce about fishing when I was a kid, man, with my auntie and other man.
Ain't nothing like fishing, I swear.
Did you go to the Innocence Conference last year? Were you out in time for that?
I didn't get no invite. I don't know. I was out, man. I went to a couple of my concerts. I was at my door every day for the first 4 days, Channel 25, 9. They on my phone. I don't even know how they knew where I stayed there. I didn't even have an address.
You didn't, and I seen you on the news like, you know, numerous of times. Right. So let me ask you this. What are you doing next year? Are you going to Memphis to the Innocence Conference next year?
I gotta get an invite.
I'll let you know when I sign up.
Tell them about San Diego, how extravagant, how good, how beautiful, how it was just wonderful.
It was an amazing experience. It was the most powerful thing I've ever done.
Ever in life. It was so many other people like us.
Yep.
I went there and you're going to meet people. You're going to experience things. The Oklahoma Innocence Project paid for my trip, my expenses and all that. So, no, it's not for free.
It's my understanding that like I have to buy a ticket because I'm not an exoneree. Mm-hmm. But I also have to pay for like my stay and how to get there. Mm-hmm. But I think that exonerees don't have to buy a ticket, but they still have to pay for like their hotel room and their plane or however they get there.
You need to go to Memphis, brother. I'm telling you, you're going to have so much fun. You're going to meet people. And once you go there and you see all these people that was in your situation that you didn't, because I went there and I didn't think it was too many people like me. I knew that wrongful convictions happened. But once you go there and it was 700 plus, and they said that was one of the, it wasn't even all the women there. And that was what shocked me, that all the women that had been wrongly convicted. It's women that's wrongly convicted, too, that we need to bring awareness to. Yeah.
I would love to go to something like that, man. Because you know what, man? This life out here judge you. You know what I mean? And to be around a whole bunch of people that's just like you, I wonder how that is. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, listen. You know, because I'm going to keep it a dollar, too. That means when I say keep it a dollar, that means I'm going to keep it real. 100%. Hey, okay. It's people that I can relate to that's been in my situation. And do you think you have PTSD?
I think I got it severely, man.
I have it severely, too. And I passed it on to my wife and you beat me. You got married in 10 days. I got married in 13 days. But, you know, the people that you're around constantly all day, every day. It's possibly that she has it, too. But, you know, I'm also seeing a counselor about that, a shrink, basically. You know, I'm trying to better myself, and I probably shouldn't have said that. But, you know, it's the truth.
No, I think it's great that you said that. You know why?
Yo, no, I'm trying to get myself together. Why?
All right, man.
Because that's exactly it. Like, if you're sick, if something happened to you that, like, made your brain sick, you definitely should get help. You shouldn't have to face that on your own. So I think it's great that you said that, because people shouldn't feel ashamed to get help.
No, I'm not ashamed. My wife looked at me like, no, you shouldn't have said that. No, no. But I'm not ashamed of nothing I do. You know, I'm
good for you.
I'll be feeling alone sometimes. You know what I mean?
I feel alone all the time, you know, so I really need to.
Okay, I'm going to put a fund up. I'm going to put a link up for a fund to get Mr. Moore here to...
Salam Moore.
To Memphis.
To Memphis. Oh, that's a great idea.
I'm going to put... If you want to... So, listeners, if you want to help send him to Memphis, go to actualinpod.com, and there will be a link on the support tab for him to go to the conference.
Salam Moore. Let's get Salam Moore to Memphis next year.
Man, I thought I would let it go, man.
Man, it's a wonderful experience. You know, you're going to have so much fun. You're going to meet people. And these people, like last year, was workshops. It's like so many workshops that you're going to go in there and listen to people. And, man, it's a wonderful experience.
Right.
You need to get to Memphis.
I need to be a part of something like that, man. For real. That's for real.
Hey, Salam.
Yes, ma'am.
Can I ask you a question? So if you had to give some advice to somebody who's sitting in prison right now for something that they didn't do, what would you tell them? Like, because you are very well adjusted. Like, you have great advice and you have hope and you have focus. Like, you said you feel blessed. What would you tell this person who's sitting in prison right now feeling hopeless?
Man, listen. No matter how much time you got, man, God didn't give you that time. So don't believe that. You know what I mean? It's just a way, if you read that book, pick up a book, get smart, you know, focus, get you somebody that'll love you, make you better from out here. Not from in there, from out here. You know what I mean? And install that God in you and that fear of God in you. You ain't got nothing to worry about, man. You keep your hope, your faith, and be patient, man. I've been patient, man. I didn't even love patience, but I've been patient, man.
Patience is a virtue.
That's what my wife done. Yeah, and that's what my wife taught me, patience. And I done that, man. You know what I mean? And she believed in me. That's why I say, you know, I love her like I love her, man. She believed in me. She was the only one that sat down and just believed in me. You know what I mean? Like, besides my mother, but I'm talking about father. Female-wise, it just come out of nowhere and don't even know who you are. Just, you know, just going off your word. And the first thing she say is like, oh, yeah, I'm going to rock with you till you get out. You know, I'm going to rock. I'm going to get you out. Last thing I'm going to do is get you.
What would you tell someone like me, someone who's never been locked up and is not an attorney? Like, how can we help people who've been wrongly convicted? What can we do?
First, you got to believe, man, in God and believe in the story. But you got to believe. You know what I mean? So if a person tell you, like, oh, man, they first story, and they tell you something, and they ain't like, you know, you get that feeling like, nah, you know what I mean? Because if you can tell if a person is really guilty or not, just by their testimony they give you, if it ain't just gripping right then and there, and you can just look at them and their character, look at them for, you know, a day or so, they just say, like, yeah, that ain't him, man. You know what I mean? And you can look through the evidence and read it real good, go back from the, you know, you got to look into it from A to Z, break it down, bust it open, and start back over if you got to. You know what I mean? If that person, you believe it's a loophole or something that this dude did not commit the crime that they said he did, something gotta give, man. And y'all do a hell of a job. Let me say that on record. Y'all do one hell of a job.
I got a question. How do you think that your experience has changed your outlook on life?
Easily, man. Easily. I don't do the stuff that I used to do. I don't even just glamorize it no more. It's just stuff like the clubs and stuff like that, you know what I mean? I don't really like going to that. I like the open band type stuff, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Pool hall table, stuff like that, man. I don't mind to care about being around a whole lot of people, but it does something to me to be in a room full of people bumping and loud music or something like that. I feel, you know what I mean, not just threatened. I just don't feel comfortable.
It took me I'm just now getting to the point to where I can be around people, and I gotta feel comfortable. I don't go to clubs or nothing like that, anything where I feel uncomfortable. But it took me a while to get to feel all right or comfortable around a large group, you know, parties or a crowd, basically.
Yeah, a crowd, yeah.
In prison, you got a crowd of, you know, people over there all the way around, all around you, and you don't know what these people are up to. They could be plotting to stab anybody. You know, you don't know.
Yeah, so ain't you no kinda, telling who didn't pay their dope bill.
And I've seen some people get stabbed by, you know, you look like such and such. Oh man, I thought that was such and such. And they didn't have their facts right, and they stabbed the wrong person. Innocent people. So correct. You gotta be
true.
Careful.
Facts.
Yeah.
Facts.
I've seen that. You know, so right. You got to be careful in there and out here, because it's, you know, that's how we got in there. You know, we, even though we was innocent kids, you know, you were a kid. You was 16, I was 17, and we went to prison for something we didn't do. So even now, we got to be careful, you know. And it's sad to say this, but, you know, you shouldn't have to feel like this. But, you know, we got to be real careful, because me personally, I'm actually trying to move from Tulsa because this is the environment I was in. But you know, I feel comfortable to a degree, but you know, with the police officers and I'm not saying they have to get me, but that's how I feel. And I hope they not, because I'm out here real, I'm doing right. You know, I just met with OSU today, Joy Fronheiser and David Williams. I met with them today. Me and my wife. We about to go to, that's why I called. When you called me, I was in Edmond looking at a house going to OKC, because, you know, me and my wife, we're about to go to college.
What?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, but, you know, I want to get away from this environment. So, you know,
yeah.
You got to get away from that old crowd, man. I don't even hang around with people I used to, you know, and it's sad. And sometimes family is worse than your enemy. And you got to be careful out here. So, you know, I'm trying to do righteous. I'm trying to pay it forward, talking to the kids and, you know, do something constructive. Because one day, you know, I want to be able to leave on your legacy, you know.
You got to, man. You got
yeah.
to.
So, you know, just you my story is my just never give up, you know. And I got a dear.
Up,
I got somebody. Hey, do you know Big Cheese?
Come on, man.
You ever been on the yard with him? Have you ever been on the yard with him? I know everybody.
How you gonna ask me if I know Big Cheese?
I know you know him, but have you?
Big Cheese. I pay Big Cheese, man, to cook for me, because he gonna cook regardless. All they pay me is a cook in the kitchen, and Cheese cooks everything.
Hey, I'm gonna tell you who Big Cheese is, and Big Cheese is Malcolm's brother, Corey Atchison. He's in prison for a crime he did not commit. I've said free Big Cheese. I've said his name before, but he's Malcolm Scott, my co-defendant, who was in prison for a crime that he didn't do. We both got out, exonerated May 9th of last year. But Corey Atchison, you know, his family call him Big Cheese because his smile. He's always teasing. That's why he called Big Cheese.
You seen the movie The Green Mile?
Yep, a gentle giant. That's Corey Atchison.
Big kind giant. And his smile will melt your heart.
That's what he looks like?
Big like that, and he got big a smile like that'll melt your heart.
Yeah, Corey Atchison. And he's innocent.
I love the way that you can empathize with the people that we interview. And especially in this case, I think that you being present for the interview made him feel a whole lot more comfortable. So I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, because I did notice, you know, he loosened up as it went on.
So until next time, thank you so much for listening.